Hi everyone, welcome to another edition of Svarm Chatter Live / Svarm Chatter Podcast, which is now streaming on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all over. If you are listening to this on Apple, if you don't mind giving a rating at least, reviewing it if possible, I appreciate it. Today, or whenever you're listening to this, episode is going to be with Rafsneir Burton, who is Rosh Hashiva and Yeshiva's based Hillel in Brooklyn. And he also was the third place winner in the Chidon HaTanach. So I'm sure we'll get to discuss those things with him. Also about Sifrei Emunah v'Hashkafa. He does have a podcast as well, Shiurim, I believe, uploaded, that he talks about that. So let's get him on. Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, Nachi. Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Rafsneir, for joining us. Why don't you start off by telling the audience a bit about your background?
Okay. Great to be here. So I'm born and bred in Brooklyn. Went to Yeshiva, Torah Tumimah. I learned through Beis Medrash and Torah Tumimah. Then I went to Brisk. I lived and learned in Lakewood for a number of years after I got married, and was invited to join the then fledgling Beis Yosef Yeshiva in Brooklyn. I moved there and I learned and then taught in Beis Yosef for maybe 10 years. I'm terrible with timing. A few years ago, I started saying Shurim as the Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva's Beis Hillel in Flatbush, which is a host Beis Medrash Yeshiva dedicated to learning Kachim. Over the years, I also authored two Sfarim and kept myself busy in numerous ways, which look forward to talking about.
Right, exactly. I mentioned the Chidon HaTanach, but we'll get to that later, a little bit later on. I'm sure that was an interesting experience.
Absolutely.
Okay, so it kind of basically more or less went to the standard yeshiva system, the yeshiva structure, and you now are a yeshiva in a pretty, standard yeshiva. So what sfarim or topics, because we'll get into this, were you drawn to as a bacher? Was it just the regular stuff, or even though you're always drawn to, different stuff?
Yeah, so I always was, I had an insatiable curiosity for sfarim. I started learning Tanakh, I think, when I was about 10. Baruch Hashem, haven't stopped. I used to read Ramchal, Maral, Gra, Medrash. I just read and read and read everything I get my hand on. I didn't have structure or guidance back then, and that's something I would love to talk about, how important it is to have a sense of the system of Jewish thought. But then I was just a big nasher, huge nasher. I was so curious, the voracious appetite, and I read and read and read.
So now I mentioned that the open you have a podcast. I think it's just Yerim that you're uploading, that you're doing, talking about Emunah Hashkafa. So was that something that you always were interested in? Were you always into the classical Sefer Emunah Rishayim? I know you mentioned Ramchal. He's classic, but a bit later.
Right.
When did you get into that, and maybe talk a little bit about the Rishayim?
Yeah. So for me, and I think a lot of people will identify with this, I discovered the classics for him as in, I mean, Ramchal is a classic. Don't let me give the wrong impression about that. But talking about the Rishonim, Sifrei Emunah and Hashkafa, I discovered those relatively late in life. They weren't necessarily what was sitting around and what was being promoted in the yeshivas. And I sort of had to find them on my own. There were times that they were like Sfarim I discovered that I couldn't believe it. Like, wow, how could these Sfarim have been a secret? How could we have not known about them? How come no one told me about this? Not to say that they were kept hidden or anything, but they weren't necessarily things you discover on your own. So the classic Sifrei Hashkafa, talking Emunah Sedeis, the Maariv Nevuchim, the Kuzri, the Chedas Levavos, and there's more. Those I sort of came to in a more mature stage, and In a certain sense, actually, they are more mature Sfarim in that they deal with more fundamental things. You really have to, you have to think about them on a deeper level than you have to think about other Sfarim, which can be very deep. But say taking the Ramchal as an example, you can a yeshiva bacher talking about, you know, teenage age could pick up Ramchal, start reading, and he thinks he understands it, and on a certain level he does, but he's not forced to think about the most fundamental questions, because those are not the questions that the later Sfarim are dealing with. The most fundamental questions are the fundamental Sfarim. And that you have to go back to a certain Tkufa to get there. So I got to that later. And what I did in the Shiurim and the podcast now is really try to give an education, give a sense of the systems that are out there, the various Sfarim, the various ways of thinking about the most basic questions in Yiddishkeit. And what we've learned in this podcast, in this whole series, is that you really have to come to these old questions, which everyone thinks they know everything about. And you have to come to them with an open mind, with a fresh look, and think about them maturely as an adult. And you'll realize, like, well, there's so much to learn. There's so much to think about on the most basic level.
Right. So something that you mentioned there is like you threw in a bunch of names as far. So one of the ones you mentioned is Chavos Halvav, isn't an extent the Kuzri. Chavos Halvav today is considered a Sifrei Musar. We'll get into what the difference is between Musar and Emunah Hashgafa, but that's a little bit known, not the whole Chavos Halvav. I'm sure we'll get to that, but part of it for sure is known. So why do you think in the Yeshiva world it is that it's really these Sfarim are not so well known? Like I said, maybe the Kuzri is a little bit, but certainly not Moira, not Amunas Vadeis, not a host of other Sfarim. Why, you know, Amunah Rama?
Right.
Why is that? Even Ikarim is not
Right.
really.
Right. So, you know, I think first it's important to say, just, you know, the short answer actually is I don't know, and I'm not going to start giving theories for that. But I think it is important. It's very important for people to know that none of these Sfarim, I mean, I shouldn't say none of that. You mentioned perhaps one of them, but a lot of the Sfarim are completely not controversial and were respected and are respected by all the Gedolim and all the Dairis. So that's not the issue here at all. There is the debate about philosophy, about, you know, should chakira as opposed to tradition. There's that element, but that doesn't apply to a lot of these Sfarim. I think if there's one thing to say about why it's missing or not adequately focused on, let's say, in yeshivas, in the regular system, I think perhaps just the ribuy of Sfarim, the great increase that we have in learning and books, it sort of makes you forget the classics. You know, when there's works building upon works, and people have wonderful chidushim and nice things to add. And yes, okay, I'm guilty, two-time author of increasing the ink out there, but obviously I felt like I had something significant to add. Hope we get to that tonight also. But I mean, I think that when there's a lot of new and a lot of derivative work, you sometimes forget the value of the classics. You take them for granted. And then just after a certain point in time, you say, hey, let's re-engage with them, and you realize, wait, we forgot a lot. By all the focus on the next step and the next step, at a certain point, it takes like this realization that we lost something. We got too far removed from the basics, and maybe they were taken for granted back in the day. I mean, these are Sfarim that were quoted all the time, and they served as the basis for the Vertloch and for, you know, taking the ideas further. And they were given, they were taken for granted as being the most fundamental Sfarim, and they still are. Just that we need to get back to them. We need to re-engage with them.
Right. So let me ask you something that basically what you're saying is that we're not here to discuss in this episode, by the way, overhaul yeshiva system. That's not my place. I'm not somebody that's worthy to discuss that. I don't think that's something you want to discuss or take on. So that's not something we're discussing. But let's say you have a guy, let's take a curling a man or a single guy in his 20s or something. Somebody wants to, you know, let's stay simple, you know, stay out of controversy, something like that. Someone just wants to learn a little more of the classics, something like Emunah v'Hashgafa. We said he didn't really have it. He never really learned it. Never came across it. That's why we're not even accessible. A lot of these, you
Right.
know, Vadeis, you come out never see a lot of
Which
places.
one?
Emunas Vadeis, for example, something that I noticed, like it's not around.
Right.
So what should somebody do? Where should they start with? Should somebody study it? Someone Menachem is a good question. Or should someone study it by themselves with a Rebbe? I mean, there's a host of
Right.
questions. If you we'll roll that all together. Where should they start?
Right. Okay. I wouldn't, you know, it's so hard to recommend one sefer over the other. I really, don't know if I have one. If I had to pick one safer to start, I would say the Khusri. The Khusri is the safer that you can just read it, and sometimes it seems like he's saying basic things, almost not adding anything, but then it builds on you. This is a whole system, very complex and tremendous depth. But I don't think the focus should be on any particular safer. That might be a good place to start. I think all these Sfarim, all these Sfarim are worthy of engaging with. The key thing is you have to pick a safer and you have to engage with it on its own terms. Because this is the power and the pitfall of the classics. Sometimes they sound like they're saying something that everyone knows, something basic. And if you're just going to take everything and fit it into what you think you already know, so that's a surefire way to learn nothing new. So you have to really approach a safer, pick any safer, pick the Khusri. You know, the Moira has its own issues, and I think we're going to get to that point of that someone asked about whether it's better to do it by yourself with the Rebbe. That's really important for the Moira. But most of these Sfarim, say the Khusri, say the Chavis HaLevavis, there's no dangers, so to speak. And if you engage with it, but engage with it on its own terms, learn the whole sefer cover to cover, and then learn it again. You know, read it through 4 or 5 times. There's really no shortcuts. I wish there were. I hope we could talk about that. Maybe we could come up with some ideas for some shortcuts. There might be actually, but as of now, I don't know of any shortcuts really. You have to take the sefer. You have to engage with it on its own terms. You have to see it as a system, because these thinkers, these great thinkers, they're foundational on the fundamental, because they were thinking on the systemic level. They were thinking about things. They weren't nashers. They weren't just putting things together and, you know, a little from here, a little from there. They were working things out in a full and complete way. So you have to jump right in. You have to learn the sefer. You have to think about it. You have to think, what is he saying? What's the idea over here? This is not about, you know, this is not about philosophy as opposed to tradition. This is more about engaging with the fundamentals of Judaism. Should I engage with them or should I engage with them? You know, there's no two ways about it. We have to think about these deep questions. And taking any of these Sfarim, but really pick one and stick to it. You'll see like worlds will open up that you just weren't aware of, didn't know existed.
Right. So it's one of those few Sfarim. Now, is that, like you said, is that something that somebody in general should do with the Rebbe, without a Rebbe? Where should somebody like that start? And by the way, mentioned, I want to just point out, someone asked, well, what yeshiva system we're talking about. We're talking about the yeshiva system, not regular literature American. I can't speak for, you know, Hasidic institutions, and I can't speak for really Israeli, and I can't speak for even, you know, YU, and that's not something I don't think either of us are talking about it, but the standard, I think, American yeshiva system is what we're referring to clarify. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's my background, so that's what I'm familiar with. And that's basically what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Right.
So let's talk about the Rebbe questions. That's so important. So, you know, it's a danger in this whole field. Like, let's take an analogy. You know, you learn Gemara, right? So you learn a sugya. This happened to everyone. You learn something, and you learn some sugya well, and you think you have it all worked out. And then you meet someone, you meet a chavrusa, you meet a friend, you start talking about it, and you realize, like, you know, you missed the boat because you need people haverim. You need a give and take. You need people to discuss things with. So, given that there isn't a tremendous structure for studying these Sfarim, there's a big risk. Someone reads these things by himself, and especially these are topics that you're not used to, and you're not so familiar with, you don't know your way around, you could get lost, you could get confused. So definitely having guidance, having a Rebbe or someone who's familiar with these Sfarim, and the more familiar, the better. You know, if he knows the gamut of Jewish stuff, that's great. If you can get someone like that, say, just what should I learn? And then come to him with your questions. And here's the key thing. Here's such an important point. If you have a Rebbe, great. If you have people to talk to, great. If you don't, and even if you do, this is very important. It's okay to have kashas. You know, it's the best thing to have kashas. You learn something. Like I once heard about someone. He said he had a box under his desk, and whenever he had a kasha, he put it in his box, and that was his great success. It's because you take the kasha and you put it away, and guess what? Kashas have answers. And I'm telling you because I'm talking to someone who I studied for a very long time, studied deeply, and just read and said, okay, let me see. And you realize how these things are really deep. These things are really deep. They're not making egregious errors. No one is saying things that are there. They're just patently wrong. They're all legitimate systems, ways of thinking. You have to be comfortable with looking at the whole thing and saying, okay, I have that shred. I don't understand that fully. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Someone just popped up. Have I come across any caches that I haven't found an answer? Oh my! Besides for that one, I guess, right? yes. Otherwise, I'd be dead, I think, right? Well, we're not. I'm not done my work. I mean, I still have things to think about. You know, I don't know. I think I would need something specific. So my short answer for the Rebbe thing is, yes, definitely try to get a Rebbe. Or a chavrusa, or other people that are learning these things. You need people to talk to simply as people chaverim, even if they're no more educated than you are. However, please do find a Rebbe that's much better, someone who has the experience. And at the same time, and always stick with the kashas, keep the kashas. You're going to find terutzim. Because what happens is when you study, especially these kinds of things, you get more sophisticated. Your way of thinking about basic ideas becomes more mature and more sophisticated, and that's the key to everything. You could there's things, you know, people talk about machlokes and hashkafa, people are very bothered by that. When you learn enough and you see that, like, there's more than one valid way of approaching things by great thinkers. Different thinkers think about things differently, and of course they'll reach different conclusions because they have a different orientation, different ways of thinking. And then when you have a rich enough understanding of the issues, that's not, it doesn't become a problem anymore. Should we address some of those questions? Those are,
So he asked a good question. Isn't there a risk that learning Machshava can cause people to have sfeikas that impact their lives? Maybe we shouldn't be encouraged to such things. So I have two, I want to go like two ways that I think you also want. Is that number one, are you suggesting that, like we said, the case we're talking about, a 22-year-old single or married guy, whatever the guy is, and he's learning, should he would you suggest, yes, go try to find the Rebbe, start learning Machshava? Or we're saying someone that not has questions, but someone that, you know, is thinking, hey, I want to know a little bit more about Yiddishkeit, what it really means, what's going on, that he should go to learn it, right? That's what he's saying. Is it an
Right.
individual approach? No, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
What you're throwing out.
absolutely.
What would
Absolutely. I was going to say
you
that.
suggest?
Yeah.
Meaning, is it something that he should go do, or is it something that, depending on the individual in that
Right.
situation, that's something that he should
No, that
start
is
with?
so important. I forgot to say that there's no answer, one answer for everyone. Okay. There's no, you know, we could talk about in general, we could talk about ideas. Obviously, people are different. There's no broad strokes for every single individual. People have different interests, people have different needs in terms of their seriousness about, or how to be serious about Yiddishkeit. You know, we talk about the problems that engaging in these things, or the problems that it perhaps raises. Of course, there's an equal amount, or perhaps more problems in not engaging with it, right? So that's something not to forget. And especially today, when most people, the nature of our society is that there's so much information out there. There's so much stupidity out there and foolishness that it becomes even more important to protect ourselves. You know, kind of like those ideas hijack people's brains, and they have to really fill it with the real stuff. You know, Chazal say, "Da mashatosh lapikaris." So yeah, if you're not going to face an apikaris, then that's less important. But I don't think we have that luxury anymore. So it's an individualized approach. That's number one. Number two is such a risk in not being serious about Yiddishkeit. We need to know. If we want to have a serious religion, authentic as adults, we have to engage with the basics of it as adults with a mature mind. We need to know what we're supposed to be doing in this world. And I'm not talking about philosophizing and proving God. That's not what these Sfarim are about. Some of them a little bit. And personally, that's not what I'm focused on at all. I'll give you some examples, let's say, from my stream on the podcast. So we're exploring what does tefillah mean? How do you daven? What is that about? What are the machlokesim about tchiyas hamitzvah? What is the tachlis habriyah? So these are the kinds of questions that, yeah, they open up kinds of philosophical, perhaps dangers for some. I think for most people, they enrich their Yiddishkeit. And yes, the point also about if someone has questions or if he's just searching, if he feels like he needs enrichment, these books are out there. These forum are out there. Read them, engage them, and please, please, please get a Rebbe for sure if you can. If you can, absolutely.
So, like, there's something else I want to bring up, which is related to this, which is you keep saying, oh, these Sfarim don't have pitfalls, etc. Well, let's bring up one classic that is learned in the yeshivas, which is called Chayos HaLavavos, which taboo, we don't open Shari Yicha. That is terrible. You're going to go off, you know, the Derech, whatever's going to happen. It's like it gets a lot of hate, to use a harsh word. And that's something that maybe there is a pitfall there.
Right.
What's going on there, and what do you have to say about that? Because chavos is something you brought up, and that's a
Yeah.
thing you find in almost every shul, actually.
Right. You find it with the Shahar Yuchad. True. Yeah.
So at any point, I don't. I the Shaykh probably isn't opened ever, but usually, but yeah.
Right. Ha. So, honestly, I don't know if there's a pitfall there. I think for a novice who doesn't know where to fit it in to the greater scheme of Jewish thought and Jewish philosophy, there probably is a pitfall and a danger. That's why probably for Shahar Yichud, definitely find someone that you could speak it over with. Undoubtedly. And please remember, keep the kashas. Okay, don't worry about it. Don't jump to conclusions. Never ever jump to conclusions. You know, the Rambam, speaking of the Moira, the Rambam says, if you don't jump to conclusions and don't assume that you know something that you don't know, then you're on the Madrega of Rabbi Kiva v'Chaveira. Okay, that is the level of Rabbi Kiva in the Rambam's world, not jumping to conclusions. So as long as you're really careful to be honest and don't assume things that you don't know and really try to talk that over, I don't see the pitfall. But I might be wrong, and it's definitely different for each person, and I don't want to, I'm not an authority on that. But you know, in the scope of the whole sefer, that's a good question. I want to get to that one about the Moira. But the scope of the Chovas HaLevavos, right? If you start Chovas HaLevavos from the introduction, which of course you should, because if you want to learn the sefer, you got to start from the introduction. So in the introduction, he talks about Yichud, about unity of God as being the center, the most basic tenet of Judaism. And then he says how from that, everything else develops. Including, let's say, Shahar B'Tochen, which is a great classic, right? Everyone studies Shahar B'Tochen. Shahar B'Tochen is always popular, very always necessary, and I think there's somewhat like a resurgence of like real interest in it. So in the Hakdama, he says that well, B'Tochen follows from Yichud. It follows from unity because if God is one, that everything comes from Him. And therefore, we have to trust it. So that's a philosophical, and I don't mean, okay, that's a dirty word. I don't mean it that way. That's a theology. That's not Mussar, right? That's a system of thinking about Hashem and how we relate to Him. So you want to understand the Chovas HaLevavos B'Tochen, and you should. You have to understand it as it's rooted in the Chovas HaLevavos' idea of Yichud. And the Chovas HaLevavos' idea of Yichud is different than the Mekubalim's idea of Yichud. And perhaps different than Rashi's idea of Yichud. We could talk about this, but let's try to keep broad. And you want to get the Chovas HaLevavos' B'Tochen from that angle because that's his system of thought. But at the same time, and I would love it for people to talk about this, what does B'Tochen look like if you have a certain different concept, different thinking, way of thinking about Yichud? But to divorce Shahar Yichud from Shahar B'Tochen it's doing an injustice to the Sefer. Which I understand, maybe perhaps some people feel is necessary, but that's not the author's intention. I think that we could definitely say that.
Right, which is something that gets into another thing that I wanted to discuss, which is what is the difference between Sifrei Musar and slash Emunah v'Hashkafa? I, as someone that I've been in charge of in Yeshiva's Eitzer, I've been in charge of a shul that has a library. Everything gets lumped together. Emunah, Hashkafa, Musar all gets lumped together, and people all the time. I remember in Yeshiva we try to put like the Ramchal Derech Hashem Musar. Guys like, no, it's not Musar. But then I'm like, well, why is Chovas HaLevavos Musar? So like, why is something gets everybody? Everything's like mixed up in a big challenge today.
Right,
And
right,
it's
right.
like. Like you think they're taking Shahar B'Tochen is a Musa Sefer, but then
Right.
Shahar Yichud is not a Musa Sefer. So like
Right.
I guess from the Rishayim, I guess Shahar Teshuvah is a Musa Sefer. I guess probably you could say that. But what is the difference, fundamental difference
Okay.
between the two things? Talk
Okay,
about
so you're a
that.
librarian, so I'm going to try to give you a categorization tip. First of all, classifying things, categorizing them is like the tremendous issue by the philosophers. Like everything is about defining. So that's legitimate. First, don't, it's not just librarian work.
So I want, by the way, I want to just cut in for a second. I do, let's say, in a shul that I'm in charge of, because it can't have like 50 sections. It's not like an official library, even though it's quite
Right.
large. I just do Musar slash Machshava, and I include them.
Okay.
No, because it goes all together, because that's what people
Yeah.
know. You're just trying to help people in these libraries.
Sure.
But if we're talking about it like theologically, philosophically, so to speak,
Right.
is what I mean more so, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So here's how I would look at it. I think Musar Sfarim on the whole, that I think Musar Sfarim, Musar means to give Yisurin. So that means the premises are taken for granted. Okay? You open a Musar Sefer, you're supposed to know already why you should fear Hashem, why there's a Torah, what Avas Hashem is. You need encouragement. You need to be reminded. You need to be focused, maybe. Those are Musar Sefarim. So even Mitzvos Yesharim, on the whole, he's talking to a person who knows all this. You know, he talks about how he has to be reminded about these things, but he's not going to explain to you why you should fear God, like the Chavis Lavavis does, why you should love him, why you should be humble in front of him. He's not going to ask a question that, again, the Chavis Lavavis, that like only a Rishon could ask, like, why is there a Torah? What is that for? You know, like things that, of course, we take for granted, and obviously you should. I'm not saying you should question them, but you have to engage with these things on a deep level, and engaging with them means thinking about them in a fundamental kind of way. So the Kuzri, sometimes you'll read pages and pages and like, what's he really saying? But you know what he's saying? He's mapping out Judaism. He's giving it the most fundamental basic map. Musar Sefarim are not mapping out Judaism. They're assuming you have the map. You just need to be like kicked in the pants, you know, get moving, start walking. And these other Sefarim are really just giving you the map. Like, what is Judaism? Hello?
Right, absolutely. Okay, that's a very good definition. So another sefer that we should bring up, which is that you mentioned, that's been asked about, is Maror Nevuchim. Classic sefer that had a tumult already so way back when by the Rishonim with the Rinyana, that whole tumult that went on in province in South France. Okay, back into the historical over here on the Maror Nevuchim. But what is Maror Nevuchim something that somebody should learn today? Is it something, how would you learn it today? Talk about the Maror Nevuchim in a context of today, not like historical context.
Right. I think there was a good question about the relevance of the philosophical questions in the Maror. Was that
right.
The question?
I believe I can scroll up and find it for you, but the Rambam of our generation says if we're not affected by the same philosophical questions, that was
right. Okay, so there's a couple of elements. You know, everyone's scared of learning the Maror, but you should also be scared of opening the daily newspaper, certainly surfing online. And, so, I mean, come on. You know, I wish we could be sheltered from every dangerous influence. Okay? And the Rambam should be our worst. Rambam should be our most dangerous influence. So that's to be said about that. Again, we have to repeat it. Of course, it's not for everyone. Of course, there's no one answer for everyone. And yes, please find someone to speak to about it. And please, don't think you know all the answers because you read two lines. Don't take something out of context. Don't even read one paragraph. The Rambam himself says you can't understand the sefer until you read it all and put it all together. And it's so obvious once you start engaging with it. It's a lifelong engagement, the Maror Nevuchim, honestly. About the point about it not being relevant today, what can I say except that I don't think, with all due respect, I doubt whoever's asking that question probably didn't engage with the Maror that much, I think, because if you do get into it, it's a timeless. And that's what classics are, right? Classics are timeless pieces of literature. Parts of it are foreign. Let's say his cosmology talks about the Gagalim. So that's going to be a little strange. And sort of you're going to have to like convert certain things into 21st century way of thinking just to think about it. But the fundamental ideas are absolutely timeless. Terminology changes. And the background changes, but this is a man of staggering genius. Everyone knows that. And this is a literary work of staggering genius. Let's just say it. And a timeless literary work. The ideas, the basic ideas are timeless.
Is there, I know you're not the Sforim expert, but is there an addition or a translation really of Maira that you enjoy? Is it the classic with the Purushim, Ibn Tibbon got it, issues? The translation is not very readable today. Do you like Schwartz's? What would you suggest for the one to pick up
Maira? Right. So, well, let's just remind everyone, the Maira, like the Chovas Levavos, like the Kuzri, like Emunas V'Deis, and other great Sforim were written in Arabic because that was the language that they felt they could express themselves in, perhaps. Complicated matters. It's very hard to express yourself in rabbinic Hebrew with very sophisticated matters, or perhaps it was for their audience. I don't know what the reason is, but they were written originally in Arabic. So there's the Ibn Tibbon translation, which for your average yeshivish person is almost completely unreadable. He's going to break his teeth. It's not worth it. No, I mean, it's worth it for a scholar, and you have to have, you know, if you want to go to the Maira, okay, so you have to have a bunch of editions. You got to start with like four or five editions. But if you want to really just jump in, I would say Schwartz's, Michal Schwartz, who was great, did great work on the Moira and the Cruzi, turned it into eminently readable Hebrew, really smooth. Regarding English, I don't think there's good ones, not any very readable ones. I'm not a great expert on that, but it would be so wonderful to see these farm put into Yishmaka readable, fun English. That would be so nice.
So that's something I want to get. Well, there is the Pine Strauss. I guess it's a little academic, but there's something that I wanted to bring up. Is something that, so again, I was tiptoeing around this. I want to see like what can be done to rectify the situation. I don't mean that because I'm not out to reform anything, but rectify the situation. I mean, people like we're talking about that the case that young man, that single guy, that Bacher, that whoever it is, he wants to sit down, he wants to read something or her.
Right.
They want to read something. They want to understand the fundamentals of Yiddishkeit. So.
Right.
It's hard because it's hard to find these farm. They weren't even written in the Hebrew. The Hebrew's hard.
Right.
Is that something that you think should they have a highly readable translation? Should be what do you think? You know,
right. Okay. Well, first of all, let's not miss the opportunity. We have to do the shameless plug. Go to the Great Sources, my podcast. I'm really trying to get the topics and bring you what the classics farm say about them and put it together. So that's a way to get some things topically. However, that by no means should replace engaging with the originals, reading this form, okay, for sure. So there's good translations of the Cruzi, there's good translations of the Moira. The reason why I think it was so important what you said about having things in English, the point you made, that is so important because obviously it becomes that much more accessible. But here's another key point, which I want everyone to think about. That this is so important. These are great works of literature, right? So you ever sit down, you have a good book, you sit down in a rocking chair, and maybe you can finish it in one sitting. You know, the Myra, the Kuzri, I don't think you can finish the Myra or the Kuzri in one sitting, but maybe a few sittings. If it would be written, remember it was written in Arabic, right? So if it would be written, put into English in a way that like it was the original language, which is a whole debate about how to translate things. We're not going into that. But these are books that are great, engaging works of literature. And we're so used to like learning things piecemeal, breaking it down, and because of that, not always making so much progress. You lose the forest for the trees. You lose the whole system because you see a vart, you have a kasha, and then you start to something else, you compare it to that, you fit it in something. Not a good idea. You want to get the whole picture. So if these things would be available in English, I would love to see it. I would make me so happy if it would be like a series of like the Jewish classics or something like that in English. Just like five of the classics for him. Let's say you could put Emunah Sudeis, Moira, Kuzri, Vavis Levavis. We have one slot left. I don't know. Any ideas there? The listeners, wait, get it. Hashem, what?
There's Ar Hashem, there's Amuna Rama, there's Efraikrim.
Yeah, Amuna Rama, right.
There's a bunch. I mean,
of course.
I'm missing others. Well, I have one that I want to discuss with you. There's something called Josh Saran that was just translated into English. I know that you were.
Josh Saran, yeah.
It's not finished.
Okay.
It's a different kind of a safer, but there's a lot of really fundamental questions addressed in there.
Yes, absolutely. It's less of an original fundamental kind of work, but if you want to jump in, so Artscroll just put that out, as you mentioned. My good friend Rabbi Yehuda Kielsen did a great job on that. At the first volume, which is out now, we're working on the second volume. So if you want to just jump right in and get a wide array of ideas, you know, he did a great job. My friend Yehuda Kielsen did a great job of showing the various ways of thinking about these questions and showing to others for I'm looking at them. So it's a great way to jump into an English work. Absolutely.
Tell the audience, how were you involved with the project?
Oh, yeah. So I'm a reader for Art School, which means basically at the last one in the line, it's quite an elaborate system they have of editors and writers. And then when it's more or less done, so then it gets sent to a reader who's supposed to just read it over and comment on it. So Rabbi Yehuda invited me to join him on the Ron project, which was really so interesting. I love doing it, you know, really just getting into the nuts and bolts of the Ron's thinking vis-a-vis other Rishayim. It's really wonderful. And then I'm also working on the Ein Yaakov, on the articles Ein Yaakov as a reader.
Nice. And anyone that can and able to read the regular Hebrew, the Masada of Cook has a beautiful edition with, you know, Pirush on it as well,
right.
Which is an amazing edition as well. So
right.
I think to kind of tie a bow on this before we move on to the next topic, which is related, would be how would you finish off what we're saying? The Rebbe, I guess people can listen to that, but like, where would someone just to finish it off and like cast it
Right.
over. Where
Right.
should somebody start off? Someone wants to know where should, besides for getting a Rebbe, what else is thing, which is hard to have to find, but what else?
Right.
What would you? What do you suggest?
So again, learn the Svarim, engage in them. I wouldn't recommend starting with the Mer Nevuchim. You could definitely start with the Kuzri, no question about it. Schwartz, again, there's a Schwartz edition of the Kuzri, wonderful, very nicely readable in Hebrew. There's also English translations. I'm not so familiar with that. I don't know if there's one that I would necessarily recommend. Read the whole thing. Try to get the whole picture. There's going to be parts of it that you're not going to understand. There are parts of it that I don't understand. And just don't worry about it. Gloss over them. Read them. Read it again. I'm now in my third or fourth reading of the Kuzri, and I'm just starting. I'm just beginning. So really, it's these classical works have a way of talking to you. You just have to let them do that. Okay, wait, we're getting a little long-winded here, right? We're supposed to answer the question. So start with the Kuzri. Do the Kuzri. Do the whole thing. Try to find a community to connect with. There are people out there, maybe through your Twitter feed that could find people who are interested in this. I don't know exactly. I'm here, and my friend, my good friend Mikey Stone had a great idea, perhaps, of creating a kind of community of learning where there'll be like assigning some prakim of a sefer to a group to read over the month, and at the end of the month, getting together. These are some great ideas. I think there's a renewed interest in these fundamentals for good reason. It's time for us to really get serious about why. And I think we got to try to create that community as wherever we can.
Right, I want to just throw one out. Also, the original, basically the first one, is the Emunas
Yes,
Vedeis. Sorry, also to throw something out there.
that is the original. Absolutely, just very hard reads, you know.
So there's Kapach's edition. There actually is one that came out from Or Etzion and Ayin Gimel. Somebody went and he did almost like a the Leiv Tov and the Chavos Vavos, almost like translating the Ibn Tibbon. So yeah, it's a translation, but he actually did that. It's not hard to get in
Okay.
America. But it's a nice addition that it makes it a little bit easier.
Okay,
But
so maybe you should feature on your Twitter feed. Maybe you could feature like a set, like these are the recommended Svarim, you know?
it's Schwartz, and it's funny. I say that as Schwartz is
Yeah.
someone that, as someone that I taught myself, and I still do. I'm not any expert in reading perfect, far from it. I'm reading Hebrew and modern Hebrew. But at the end of the day, if you open Ibn Tibbon, I know you say, "Well, that's the classic. He was a reason." Open that and open Schwartz in the modern Hebrew. I mean, it's just even to the American guy, the Schwartz is so much. It's so much. It's easier to
Yeah,
read.
absolutely.
You
Absolutely. Yeah.
can't care. There's actually somebody just did a new translation of Chavos Halevavos, as well. Someone that was Bar-Ilan University Press did it. And besides all these, you have the Kapach. So there's really wealth of and Moira's got like a million editions, but enough
Yeah,
waiting.
but seek and thou shalt find, okay? Don't stop looking.
Exactly. So let's get into something the classic, something that's really in your wheelhouse, which is Tanakh, starting with the Torah and going into all the rest of Nach. You mentioned how you got into that. So when did you start learning Nach, and what got you into that? How did you get into that?
So I think there'll be my life, my own Tanakh journey. I think there are probably two milestones. One is when I was about 10 years old. I said, "Hey, I got to start learning Tanakh." And what motivated me is just curiosity and a love of language, a love of words, really. Tanakh is just so beautiful. So I started doing, I think I started doing around then about like started just reading like 10 Prakim every Shabbos, which I've been kept up for a long time. I don't want to date myself, right? But anyways, I've been doing that for many years, for decades. So that worked great for me to just get familiar with it. And for my personality, which is I'm okay having Akasha, I don't have to understand everything, just cover ground, get the basics. So that worked for me in terms of getting familiar with Tanakh. And then when I was about 20, actually maybe a little later than that, I started learning Chumash. Like in an original fashion, meaning approaching it with no preconceived notions except that it's divine, and then taking it from there and saying, "Hey, what is the text telling us? What can we glean from this on its own terms?" That's something I started doing about 20 years ago. Tried to devote my Shabbos afternoons to that for a long time. So that's after the nap, okay? Let's say that. And that really opened up these worlds for me of discoveries in Tanakh and finding how the deepest ideas are really just mavish there in the text to be found. That turned into a Chumash year, which is now in the ninth year, only fortunately disrupted by Corona, but we hopefully will resume an Elul. A Thursday night shiur has been going on for 9, 10 years. We started from Bereishis, and now we're in Vayeshiv. We're doing like two psukim a week, the Iyun Rav, just really analyzing the psukim. So I look at all the svarim, Mishnayim, Achronim, everything everything that we all know of. I'm sure there's many that I haven't heard of, and I should look at, but I look everywhere. But then I think, what do we see from the Torah itself? And what I discovered, and this led to the really is the key insight that led to my shurim and the svarim. Now we're talking about the Chumash shurim, not the Ashkafa shurim, but the Chumash shurim and the svarim, is that Tanakh has this language. It can speak to you. You have to be able to decipher its codes. One thing I would pick above anything else is like this idea of Gzeira Shava, that there's these words in a parasha, and then you find somewhere out in Yeshaya, you have these similar words or similar themes, and then hey, maybe Yeshaya is like a Medrash on Bereishis. Maybe Hosea is Darshaning Vayeshev, and it is. It's like the first Medrash on the Torah, and then it's like it's Muchach, and then from there you discover Chazals. You finally understand what they were doing in Midrashim and where they were coming from, and everything comes together in this profound, tremendous, beautiful ways, but also completely Muchach. Like you don't have to make anything up, which is. If you didn't get that sense yet, I don't like making things up. That's the thing. I like original, right? Original means two things, right? Original means the original, like the first, but it also means new, because truly the best stuff are when you really discover what the sources are saying. Don't make it up. No need for that.
Is that something, this mahalach, is this something that you taught yourself? Is something you had a Rebbe for? How did you get started on this?
Yeah, I'm autodidact. Guilty as charged. I taught myself. What should I say? Basically
Said
taught
one
myself.
today or Sfarim that actually do this kind of mahalach?
Yeah, so it was interesting. I was fortunate enough through Chidon Tanakh also opened up this world to me a little bit. But even before that, I was fortunate enough to meet people in the Tanakh world, more like the Mizrahi world that are doing this kind of thing. Some yeshivish also, but it's not so common in the yeshivish world. But this, I sort of discovered that concomitantly with me doing this, there were other people discovering this mahalach, with this, which is new but old. I mean, this is really, I see it as what Chazal were doing, but discovering the tools for it and sort of doing it again. So I met some and found some wonderful Talmidei Chacham who've been doing similar work.
Anybody you want to mention by name or just leave it at that?
Yoni Grossman is great. Let's see, Reb Nachman Levine is a genius. He lives in Chicago, and he does wonderful stuff. Detroit, I'm sorry, no, he does wonderful stuff. You gotta look for it. You gotta look for it.
So why is it something that you think there's just, again, getting back to the quote unquote yeshiva world, that there's such a general lack of knowledge of Tanakh? I think Torah, people know at some point, they do Shnei Mikra, they know Rashi, but Nach for sure, surely,
Right.
like
Right.
Esther, plus it's not, people don't know. Like, why is that? Is it the classical excuse of the maskilim? Like, what's the
Yeah.
reason?
Well, so yeah, it's the same thing as the other question. I don't know if I'm the person for that, to define historically how this happened. But part of it is probably the same thing as we were discussing earlier, that the further you move away from the sources, you take these things for granted, right? What can imagine you sit down and you put a chumash and you don't even have any mefarshim. Like, what are you doing, right? Everyone knows chumash. Like, okay, do you really know chumash? Have you looked at it with an adult eye for the last 20 years, or do you just know it because you knew it from when you were six and you still know it from when you're six? Well, then you know it on a 6-year-old level. So I think these things are taken for granted, right? It's like taken for granted, and yeah, okay, of course, there's Torah, and then we don't re-engage with it, but you have to.
And I find that this is not only Chas V'Shalom, not to belittle, this is, I find Rashi is amazing. And every time I do Rashi, you really see something new there. But that being said, a lot of people just stick with Rashi and I think they really don't necessarily want the different version. And like someone one time told me, I don't know if it's Brisker Row, said, for us, Pshat is Rashi. And I think it's really true. And today, they don't know Rashi, so they don't really necessarily learn another one. I remember I did myself Ramban. I went to whole Ramban one year, and the
Wow.
Kabbalah the other. Ramban is, I mean, you could, it's fascinating, and there's different things in there that you don't, and it's so important. And by the way, get it before, as an Amunah sefer, Ramban Altar is an Amunah
Oh,
sefer.
yes,
So
absolutely. I forgot to mention that, of course.
that maybe should go in the
That's
top five.
right.
I don't know. It's
Right.
something that, like, is that somewhere? So is that, I'm like, is that something that you would suggest people start
Right,
with?
right, right.
Tyrus. They go with Ramban. What do you suggest on Tyrus for
Okay,
them?
so again, there's no one answer, right? Let's not forget, there's no one answer. Ramban is amazing, of course. So is Ibn Ezra, which, by the way, the Ramban incorporates as like bottom line. But you have to be ready for it. You have to understand it. And by the way, I would say the Ibn Ezra is also a full system of thought, of Ashkafa, when you get used to it. There's gems out there. There are these gems out there just waiting to be discovered. If you engage with the Ramban, it's like your own experience, right? What happened? You went, you said you'd do this, and you're like, wow, you didn't know. You don't know what's out there. These beautiful gems waiting to be discovered, waiting to be polished. Same is true for the Ibn Ezra. Same is true for the Rashbam. You know, how to go about it. How to go about it. Huh.
Well, let's stick with Torah for a second. I mean, I know for myself, actually just doing Shneimerka is almost kind of what you do. You just start reading the Pesukim. And every time you do the Parsha every year, you see new things you didn't come across just in the Chumash or in the Unkelis. But besides that, let's say for Chumash before we get on Tanakh, is there a way, a Mahalach, that someone could start? Do they just pick a different Mefarsh every year to start with? I'll say Rishon, a classic.
Yeah, that's a
that's
great
what I
idea.
found that I did Rashi, Ramban, and Sfarno. I actually found, I should point out, there's a Sefer of Menhagim, I believe it's in Yosef Eimetz. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It was a German Sefer of the 1600s, I think.
Yes.
Number one. It says that you should do a 3-year cycle, Rashi, Ramban, and B'chai. Yeah, I have to find where it is. But
that's great.
What's something that you would suggest to people today to do?
Right. So, okay, I love what you did. That's great. I did that myself also. I did that with Ramban. I did it with Ibn Ezra. Of course, Rashi for years and years.
But I want to jump in. I want to ask you if you agree with me. I found not people are like, oh, how can you Ramban without Rashi? But then it happens is you can't finish Ramban because Rashi is so massive. If you try to learn Rashi, I just that year do Rashi. I don't know. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
That,
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. You know what?
Hard.
Unfortunately, time is what?
Yes, I'm saying time is just, you have so much, only have so much time.
That's the problem. That is the problem. We need more hours in the day. So prioritize, you know, well, first you got to do what Rashi did, okay? Rashi learned Chumash. So you got to learn the Chumash. And then you got to learn the Rashi. Absolutely, Rashi is your sadistic, you know. You have to think about Pshat, and that's something I think when what you quoted before about Rashi is Pshat. I think there's a problem there is maybe that people don't always think about the Pshat that's in Rashi, and then you miss the Pshat. So that could be a problem. And that Ibn Ezra and the Ramban will keep you on the straight and narrow. They won't let you forget about Pshat. So as much as you can, engage with them. But always don't forget about the parsha itself. Don't forget about the text, the source text. Never.
Right. And I want to be clear. I wasn't, that's what I'm saying, someone shouldn't do in Rashi, but Rashi is still like the number one for a reason, and Rashi is still amazing.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just like, you know, what about the other ones? Because Rashi, a lot of Rashi people know, and sometimes people don't know the other stuff.
Right,
so
right, right.
What about, okay, so let's get, okay, Torah, there is, though, people do know it to some extent. What about now? Getting there, that's like, people have no idea what is going on. Maybe they learned it way back in the day, and then actually the girls are better. They know, I think, a lot more, especially the, right? I think they learn it a lot more. But even them, I don't know how much they do or don't do, and the men for sure. So what would you say? What is something that? How do you would you advise somebody who wants to start learning Nach? What should they do? How do you get into it?
Okay, well, first of all, if you haven't yet learned Nach, get off this podcast and go start learning Nach. I think that's the first thing, because it's really important, okay? How should you do it? So I told you how I did it, what worked for me. That's what worked for me. It's not the same for everyone. What worked for me is to just jump in. I tried to do 10 Prakam Shabbos. That's ambitious. You could do 2, 3, 4, 5 every Shabbos. Start with Yeshua. Till you get to Yeshaya, you'll be okay. You know, it's like the Daf Yomi, right? You know, that's Brachas, everything's swimming, and then gets the air of him. But so Nach is like that too, but you'll get used to it and keep it up because it gets easier. And then you got to do it the second time. Just got to keep on doing it. That's what worked for me. Then of course, you know, if you have problems that really you can't go right to, there's the classical question on the page and the Kreis Gedolus, there's Rashi, there's Mitzudis. Radak is very good for getting the bigger picture, for getting what the parak is about, what the context is about. And the main thing is really just get its language. Try to let it talk to you. Try to let it inspire you, simply.
Right. Is there any particular Today we have a wealth of English for him, but I don't know any purpose that fits as well. Any English basic translation, basic book that you recommend to people?
Don't know. Don't know about that.
Okay. What is now? Okay, let's continue this. What is your favorite Sefer of Nach?
Oh, huh. Okay. The competition here, obviously, very competitive. My favorite Sefer of Nach is a small one. Okay. Malachi, last one of the Treyasa. Three
Why?
Prakim. Yeah, Malachi. Malachi is three prakim. It's beautiful. It's written by Malachi, which is a pen name, so that's interesting. Malachi, I think, contains, ends famously, Hineanechi Shaleh Navi. We read it on Shabbos HaGadol. So it's, as I see it, it's the sefer that contains the keys to the Geula, like the solution to all our problems. It's just beautiful, and it's actually a good sefer for illustrating what we were talking about earlier about Tanakh being a medrash of the Torah, because Malachi explicitly starts with Yaakov and Esav and uses that for our relationship to Hashem, that like Yitzhak ultimately ended up loving Yaakov, gave the brachos to Yaakov, so we're blessed by Hashem. So you learn that, I would say, read it again, read it a few times. Three prakim, it's easy. You want to jump in, get the spirit of Tanakh in a quick way, like what's Tanakh all about? I would say Malachi. Don't start, Yeshua is a narrative, so it's easier. But if you want to get a little more of a flavor, read Malachi, read it a couple of times and start thinking about it. What's he saying? What are the messages here? Because they're so profound, they're so life-changing.
You want to tell everyone what you mean? It was a pen name.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Malachi means my angel or my messenger. So there's a book written by someone, Malachi. Now there's no, doesn't have a father's name. It's just plain Malachi. So it's accepted that there was some Navi, which is speculation in Chazal who he was. Let's say it was Ezra, because it's his name that's used to mean my messenger. So like it's a name about his being a prophet instead of his given name. And there's a lot of mention of Malach of messengers or shlichim in the Sefer. So it's clearly literary device.
Gotcha. So you obviously have this knowledge and a love of Tanakh. So you were involved last year with something called the Chidon HaTanakh. What was that experience like? And have you been involved?
Yeah, the Chidon HaTanach. Oh, that was awesome. So the Chidon HaTanach is this international Bible quiz. It's run by the Israeli government, and there are rounds in across the world. So there's the American semifinals, and then the finals, and then the two winners from America go on to Israel. This was last Hanukkah. We went on to Israel to compete with people from Brazil and all over the world. 20 competitors, I think it was, in the finals. I was beaten by two people who deserved to beat me. So okay, no contest there. They were the two Israelis. They were just amazing. It was a wonderful experience to see Yidden from all over the world who love Tanakh so much. It was really a wonderful experience for to meet Jews of all stripe and see other worlds of learning, and other focused on different things. And I forged some great lasting connections with some great Talmidei Chachamim in areas that are unfortunately not as well known in our world.
I'm just curious, how does it work? I'm not really familiar. What do they ask you? How does it?
Okay, so here's a good one. But this one is really hard. I'm not being fair now. And this is actually one that I got wrong, okay? So which number is greater? Okay? I think we have to get the users involved here if they have like a, like everyone could guess. Which of the following numbers is greater? The cost of a horse in the days of Shlomo, the amount of kikrim of Zahav, I guess, the Chizkiyo sent to Sancheiriv, the number of a gartelim, which is a kind of kli that Ezra brought up from the Beis HaMikdash, or I forgot the fourth one. So, yeah, but that was a really hard one. Out of
Wow.
50, I got that one and another one wrong. So that's I deliberately selected a hard one. Then there were, where does this pasuk appear? Who said this? All pshat, because they don't want to start debating, oh, well, I read this differently, I understood it differently. All surface level,
Gotcha. Okay, so I think we should end off with something that you wrote to Tu Sfarim. I believe a few years ago you wrote something called Eretz Yaakov, which is some on the Avos, and then you recently wrote Mishneh Tiakev, which is on your own Drushim, I guess it's called rather than Drushim, on Mayadim. What are the Sfarim and what are they about? I mean, the
Okay.
style, like I just said what they're about. I mean, like, what's the style? And everyone can already guess it's kind of the style you've been hinting to this whole show, but I guess talk about it yourself.
Right. Yeah, that's like, okay, I'm so proud of those. Thanks for bringing those up. That's, those Sfarim are really the product of this kind of original thinking and but applied to Tanakh specifically. I love the classic Sfarim, and that's the Shurim, the Hashkafa Shurim, and the great sources. The podcast does cover like my interest in those Sfarim, but in the classic Sfarim of Rishayim. But these Sfarim that I authored are really very original and are really come directly from the Book of Books, like this, the ultimate source, Tanakh. And like I was talking earlier, what I found from studying Tanakh and the way I do is that I always meet Chazal on the road, and like I feel like, oh, now I know what Chazal were doing, and I get this confirmation. I have this idea, and I see a Medrash, like boom, now I get it, and it makes me feel like I'm doing the right thing. So it's wonderful. So the Eretz Yaakov is on the Avos, the parashas of the Avos. So it's selected essays. I call it Drushim. My good friend Rabbi Yossi Avivi says I should have called it Mamorim. So there's a little bit of different connotation there. So maybe it's really essays on selected topics. It goes through seven themes in the parashas of the Avos, and it takes these ideas in the parashas and it develops them and shows you how broad they are. And I'm speaking from my own experience, simply life altering, and hopefully for those who read them too. I know I got wonderful feedback from a lot of people. So that's the Eretz Yaakov. The Mishneh Yaakov is all similar approach. It's on the Mayadim, mainly focused on Shabbos and the Mayadim. In fact, I'm thinking this week's podcast, a little bit crossing over here, but I do this sometimes. The Great Sources podcast for this week, I might put up. I might say, make the episode about the Eicha piece that's in the Mishneh Yaakov. So in the Eicha piece, for example, I take the first pasuk in Eicha. And I talk about how really that pasuk contains really deep ideas about the seeds of the Churban, what it was about. And these are ideas that are deep, relevant, practical, and engaging. I know you mentioned to me that you took a look at that piece.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's very, very interesting, very fascinating. What can I ask you? Why are both Sfarim have the name Yaakov? Your name is clearly not Yaakov.
My name is not Yaakov, my name is Schneer. So okay, well, let me first answer your question. Yaakov, Yosef, Olav HaShalom was my father, who these Sfarim are dedicated to. So let's do a little bit of sleuthing here on the names. It's the Eretz Yaakov. So my name is Shneor, right? So that's Eretz Yaakov. And then Mishnas is for the Shnei in Shneor, right? And it's about the Shmoyade. Wait, we're not finished. It's about the Mayade Hashana. And it's my second Sefer. So boom. So,
Gotcha.
but don't stop by the cover. Get into it. Open it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what's the current project that you're working on right now?
Ooh, okay. Oh, I have a bunch of projects. I'm very bad that way, which is that I like scatter myself. I always wonder if it's what are you what's your what do you do? You pick one thing, or you like all over the place? Because I'm never sure what's better.
Thing, but it ends up all over the place. Same as I think everybody, more or less.
No, there's one person I know who does he when he's focused on one thing, he does that. But I do like lots of different things. So obviously, I have my Shurim HaKadoshim that I work on. But in terms of writing, I've been adapting my last Sefer, Mishneh Yaakov, into English. And I say adapting, it's not merely a work of translation. It's really trying to rewrite them for an English audience. I sort of put that aside, and perhaps I'll try to maybe outsource that work if I can. Instead, I've been focused more on I'm focusing on filling out the podcast of the Hashkafa, the Great Sources podcast, and developing new content for that. I'm also looking to do a new podcast. I'm working very hard on a new podcast that's going to be more rooted in Tanakh and really bringing the powerful, the utterly powerful and different. And when I say different, I mean like new, not what we're used to, ideas from Tanakh and showing how they can be relevant to us in our daily lives. And when I say daily lives, let me clarify. I don't mean like, oh, there's a lot of chizik out there, which is all great. I mean like we could really change on a deep, deep level and start, like Chazal say, I think we could really engage with the Avos and with what Tanakh is teaching us in a life-altering way. So that's what I'm working on, developing that, like a different kind of podcast too.
Wow, sounds good. So, but as written works, you're saying you're just working on really adapting the English. That's really what you're working on now. English
Yeah, and
and
also this other podcast idea, I'm thinking, and I'm working on that too, to at the same time do essays on these topics while I'm doing the audio. Perhaps that might be too ambitious, you know. I tend to bite it more than I can chew.
like a soul. Okay,
Yeah.
well, thank you very much for joining me tonight. I'm going to try to link in the when it's going to be on podcast in the show notes and also on Twitter to your Svarim, if I have links for them, and to your podcast as well that people can check it out.
Naki, this is great. Thank you so much.
Likewise, thank you
I
for
really
coming.
enjoyed. I just want to ask you, is there anything that we left? Like, I don't want to leave anything hanging. Like, is there just anything that we have to address or loose
No,
ends? I think we're good, right?
I think we're good, and yeah, thank you very much
Okay.
for coming.
Wonderful. Naki, thanks so much for having me. Have a good night.
Take care. Have a good night.